From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with the National Pork Producers Council. They're a bit afraid that foot and mouth disease could destroy their industry if there were to be an outbreak in the United States, and they're asking Congress in the next Farm Bill to take up that potential problem. We'll hear also today about the rest of what's happening in the agricultural news and take a look, too, at the weather forecast, that with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon, December corn up 3 1/4 at $3.40 and a half. The March at 3.50 3/4, 3 1/4 higher. May up 3 1/4. July 2 3/4 higher. December up 2 3/4 as well for next year. November beans up 17 1/4 at 9.89 3/4. The January 17 higher at 9.94 3/4. July beans at $10.06 3/4 of a cent, up 15 1/4. Soft red winter wheat in the July at 4.49 1/2, up 1 1/2. The July hard red at 4.55, up 1 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures, the October 37 1/2 cents lower at $107.52 1/2, and the September's a nickel lower at $135.40. Lean hogs in the October at $55.65, up 72 1/2 cents. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at some of these numbers. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today, Wayne. It's just a beautiful day.
Yes, what a beautiful day it is, Todd. And I'll tell you what, I loved hearing that forecast for our farmers in our area because, you know, out in the Northwest and down in the moving a little bit south out there, they're talking about a lot of rain this week. And it's one of the reasons the market rallied today.
Yeah, in the Northwest, it's probably muddy. I made note, and you'll hear just a bit later, that 36% of the topsoil was surplus in Minnesota. That was last week, and they're still getting rain, so I suspect they're not very happy, and the crop may be deteriorating in condition there. But I do want to focus on one other item other than the soybeans themselves. Soybean oil was up a dollar again today. Why is this leading the marketplace?
Palm oil was up very sharply overnight. Stocks don't seem to be building back rather fast. China come back. China was a very big buyer of palm oil, and the palm oil is what was pulling the bean oil on up this morning and causing that. One of the things that's always concerning in the bean market is when it's an oil-led market, because meal is a much more stable one to push the market around a little bit because it's 70% meal and 30% oil. So, you know, we're talking a smaller percentage of the bean, but it was the palm oil that started the rally this morning.
Yeah, so the palm oil has been pushing the marketplace for a couple of days on short supplies. We saw this earlier in the year, I think, in August. Part of that rally was pinned on the palm oil market, though it was thought that maybe supplies had settled in. I guess that's not been the case. You're a little worried that this rally could go away fairly quickly then?
Well, you know, we, along with the oil pushing everything up, we pushed above the 250-day moving averages today, and that sort of added a little strength and pushed us on a little farther than what we were when we went to break this morning, Todd. Then we sort of, when we went up against the real resistance of the old highs, why we backed off a little bit here. You know, we didn't quite get to that 43 on the corn, and we got to 94, but not the 94.5 on the beans like we were looking. That would have been more of a breakout, or the 443 actually on a closing basis on the corn. So, you know, we didn't quite get there, but we're awful close to it, and we did run into some resistance up here today on that. You know, there was no real fundamental reason. The bean yields continue to be good. We watched the basis level drop from 10 over here locally to 20 under today on the beans, so a 30-cent change in the basis levels today on the beans.
And the expectation that will continue to widen out, especially in our part of the world, as more soybeans, even more corn, continues to come in with the good weather forecast.
You know, if we can get harvest rolling along, I'm afraid that that one might widen out a little bit. But the commercials definitely want to be buying, getting their hands on some beans, because we got a big lineup down at the Gulf to be shipped out.
Yeah, so there are a whole bunch of things happening here, and that would be led by palm oil, which, of course, would be vegetable oil, any type of vegetable oil. So the Chinese wanting vegetable oil as a cooking oil, I assume. Most of that would come out of Indonesia and some of those places. They had suffered through a weather event, basically a drought caused by La Nina, El Nino, and one of those two. And now we're in the midst of harvest here in the United States, and the world's turning to the U.S. for bean oil supplies. But on top of that, we've got soybeans that are just headed to China for use in their livestock sector as well. So demand remains really good. The question then is, will this demand be enough to cause producers to switch acres next year and potentially boost the price of corn later in the marketing year?
Well, I think that, you know, the ratio right now says that there will be a switch from some corn acres to some bean acres for next year, Todd. And, you know, as we look at it, as we look at the corn being depressed down here, basically a 320 type cash price, farmers can't make money at that, but they can make some money at $9.50 to $10 beans. So I think there's going to be some acres switched if we stay at this sort of ratio.
What do you think about the marketplace for corn, and what are you hearing about the condition of the crop, both from the eastern and the western corn belt?
Well, I think, you know, as we get into the good ground in a lot of areas, we're seeing some very good corn yields. We are seeing some variability a lot more than what was expected, and I do think the government's going to have to come down on their 175 or 174.5 point yield, because I think that it's going to be lower, and that's going to be probably closer to 170, 171, or maybe even a little lower, depending on how we go. But all in all, there's an awful lot of corn acres. We're still going to have a big carryout, and there's just an awful lot of corn to handle, so it's going to be hard to maintain a rally as we go into harvest unless we have some real weather problems, because just an awful lot of corn burdensome harvest handle.
What's the best yield you've heard, and what's the worst one you've heard?
As far as beans, the worst I have heard in our area here is 60, and the highest is 84.
Well, I'm 11 bushel above that.
Well, that's good. And that's great, actually.
So yeah.
We'll go on with that. And the corn, 140 to 282.
Holy smokes, that's a lot of corn. Although the 140 wasn't much of a yield, that's
that was
sure.
That was next. That was a field next to the timber that was really clay, poor soil, and it stayed wet and had a lot of shade and had a lot of deer surrounding it too. So, but it was a yield for a field.
Anything that producers ought to be thinking about at this point as it goes to marketing either of these crops?
I think that the one thing that you want to be considerate about is that the beans do have a lot of possibility for down the road to gain a little bit, and not replacing all of them, but if you do sell all your beans, probably buying one cull or something along the way would be a good idea.
One other item, and we've been hearing a little bit about this, but do you suppose there's very widespread in terms of a problem, and maybe we just don't know yet, with disease in the corn, diplodia, other stock rots and such?
I think that especially with all the wet weather happening out west, we're going to have a lot of problems with some corn. They're going to have slowed down harvest. I think there's going to be stocks going down. We've been told repeatedly by seed corn dealers, farmers, and everybody as they walk through their fields, that if you bump a stalk hard, it's going to probably fall over. So I think these new hybrids are cannibalizing the stalk to put it all in the air. And I wouldn't wait too long for Mother Nature to dry your corn down forever this fall, because we are seeing a little bit of wet tendency through the month of October as far as the general over the whole Midwest forecast, and I think I'd rather have it in the bin and pay a few more cents for drying than I would have it on the ground and out in the field.
Wayne, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, top executives from all five agrochemical and seed companies looking to merge were set to appear today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. That in an effort to reassure lawmakers that the quickly developing consolidation trend won't be bad news for farmers. Since late 2015, Dow AgriSciences and DuPont Pioneer agreed to merge. Chinese chemical company ChemChina bought Syngenta, and just last week, Bayer AG announced a deal to buy Monsanto. That's caused a lot of worry on all sides about where the industry is headed. As a result, the hearing will likely get heated, and it won't be brief. The American Farm Bureau Federation, National Farmers Union, and representatives from the National Corn Growers Association and the American Soybean Association are all expected to testify along with the head of the American Antitrust Institute. As the Big Six agricultural firms look to consolidate into the Big Four, lawmakers, including Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, have raised numerous concerns about options available to farmers and their cost as the marketplace gets less competitive, especially given the state of the farm economy. Grassley, in particular, is worried about the potential for office closures and loss of jobs as merged companies look to shed duplicative management and operations personnel. Dow AgriSciences, for instance, was headquartered in Iowa, but the merged company will be based at DuPont's existing facilities in Delaware. But company officials have said they will maintain a presence in Iowa. And it doesn't help that two of the proposed mergers, Bayer Monsanto and ChemChina Syngenta, involve an American firm matching up with a foreign company, one of which is based in China, America's geopolitical foe. For this reason, the Syngenta merger has come under scrutiny from NFU and other groups who say the deal would give China a degree of control over U.S. food supply. Meanwhile, the takeover of St. Louis-based Monsanto by the German chemicals giant would likely mean less tax money flowing into U.S. coffers. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but move to environmental policy, where the Democrat Party appears likely to elevate Senator Tom Carper, a moderate who backed the Keystone XL oil pipeline, to succeed retiring Senator Barbara Boxer for the top spot on the Environment and Public Works Committee next year. The Delaware Democrat says it's a little too early to decide whether he wants to lead Democrats on the Environment Committee, leaving the door cracked ajar for Senator Bernie Sanders to possibly claim the gavel. Carper's approach to environmental policy is on the opposite end of the spectrum from Sanders and Boxer, emphasizing quiet consensus building over provocative pleas for climate action. While he is a strong supporter of EPA's carbon emission regulations for power plants, Carper's 81% lifetime score from the League of Conservative Voters ranks him sixth from the bottom in the Senate Democratic Caucus. Though his elevation might give environmental advocates heartburn, Sanders' selection would face resistance among red state Democrats, several of whom will be facing tough re-election races in 2018. Now let's talk about WRDA, the Water Resources Development Act. Asked about what's happening in the House on WRDA, Senator Jim Inhofe shrugged and said he'd like to know as well. I've got to call in to the Transportation Committee Chairman, that's Bill Shuster, to find out what their intentions are because we're ready. Shuster had said last week that he'd hoped to get the lower chamber's narrower WRDA passed before Congress adjourns this month, but a spokesman declined comment on Monday. And finally today, we'll go overseas, where British Prime Minister Theresa May made clear on Monday that the United Kingdom would not leave the European Union without having a trade arrangement with Brussels in place. May, who was on her way to New York for the United Nations General Assembly, is adamant Britain will secure a trade deal that is ambitious in scope, covering both goods and services, the latter which make up almost 80% of the UK economy. She dismissed the Slovakian president's warning over the weekend that the Visegrad Group, Slovakia, Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic, would veto any deal that restricted their citizens' rights to live and work in the UK. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I want to take three things up with you right now. The first two involve safety. We're about to harvest one of the largest crops on record in the United States. If you're a farmer or working on the farm during this harvest season, do be careful. There's an awful lot of equipment there. Much of it is extremely dangerous. Do not, and I repeat this, do not try to operate on that equipment. when it's running, meaning don't try to fix it when it's running. It's a good way to lose a finger or a hand or an arm or a life. The second thing, if you're a member of the public and you're traveling on the two lanes where the tractors and the trucks and the combines might be, do pay attention. They're watching out for you, but these are really big and they're really heavy, and you won't win if you happen to come in contact with one of them. The third thing is an entirely different subject. It's about the Fall Fun Drive. We're in the midst of it, and it's really quiet here at the Urbana-Champaign campus for Illinois Public Media, the radio station from which this programming comes. A small group of our existing friends have donated an extra gift to encourage your support, matching any gift made right now, dollar for dollar. That's right, a group of friends of WILL has made a gift and said, if someone else gives, we will match them dollar for dollar. So you can double your money to the radio station. If you want to do that, you can do it right now. Go to willpledge.org, willag.org if you want, and find the donor button, but willpledge.org, and fill out all of the information and make sure you check the boxes that say in support of agriculture. Or you can just call this number right now as well, 217-244-0025. That's 217-244-0025. So there you have it. Three things to think about right now. The first two are safety. If you're on the farm and you're working, do be safe. It's National Farm Safety and Ranch Week. If you're driving the byways of the great state of Illinois or Iowa or Minnesota or Nebraska or Indiana or any other Corn Belt state, be careful. You won't win a contact with a semi or a combine or a tractor. And finally, please do take some time to give back to the radio station that gives you so much agricultural information at willpledge.org or 217-244-0025. Let's look forward to the next farm bill and explore some of the possibilities. The National Pork Producers Council wants mandatory funding in that bill for a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. The group says the U.S. is not prepared for foot and mouth disease if it were to come, and that could cripple the entire agricultural sector. NPPC officials say it's not a matter of if, but when the U.S. livestock industry will suffer a major outbreak of the disease. And its president-elect, Ken Mashoff, says pork producers are nervous.
They're scared to death about this potential and what it would do to our exports overnight, how catastrophic the numbers we're seeing are not. I mean, we're going to have hard numbers on this. It approaches, I mean, it is multi-billions, even up to as high as some studies approaching 100 billion.
Pork producers argue the U.S. does not have enough FMD vaccine, foot and mouth disease, doses to handle more than a small localized outbreak. The group says antigen strains at Plum Island, New York, would have to be shipped overseas for mass production into a vaccine, which could take months. President John Weber from the pork producers says those steps should be taken right now rather than later.
But if we had an outbreak in the United States, we would be seriously behind the eight ball. They would not have the capacity to manufacture the millions of doses that we'd need in a relatively short period of time, no matter where that outbreak occurs. But certainly if it would occur in a state like Iowa, we're talking about a significant amount of vaccine that would be needed in a short period of time. And we just don't have that ability today to get that done.
The NPPC is leading a livestock coalition seeking $150 million in the next farm bill to fund an FMD vaccine bank, and wants the Department of Agriculture to contract now for an offshore vaccine bank and enough surge capacity to swiftly meet outbreak needs. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me a little bit about the weather forecast for this week. And I'm mostly interested not in the dry areas, but those places that have been wet, especially parts of Iowa, Minnesota in particular, some of the western Corn Belt states, what they look like at this time?
Well, a lot of what's transpired over the last week to 10 days is going to continue. Those areas you just mentioned, the Western Corn Belt, those are going to be the most wet with a series of systems coming in from the Pacific Northwest and going through the Northern Plains and Rockies. This will help draw some moisture northward, and so there's going to be an axis of some decent rains from Wisconsin through Minnesota, Iowa, eastern Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma down into Texas. That's sort of going to be a ring of activity in those western areas, while the middle and the eastern areas of the Corn Belt, well, they're going to be a lot drier. In fact, we're looking at a warmer, drier pattern for most of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, portions of central and eastern Missouri. As wet as it will be in the west, it'll be that dry, the opposite in the east.
Just exactly how wet? And I'm thinking, for instance, that the surplus category for topsoil moisture in Minnesota this week from the Crop Progress Report showed 36% in that category. It's pretty unlikely they'll be running or running in very good conditions.
Yeah, this will be especially true over southern growing areas of Minnesota. Northern Iowa, western Iowa, all the southern half of Minnesota, and into the eastern half of Nebraska. We're looking at rainfall amounts that could be 1 to 3 inches here over the next 5 to 7 days, a little bit more coming beyond that. I do see a drier trend towards the early to middle portions of next week in those areas, but at least here in the next week or so, 1 to 3 inches in those rain-soaked areas is a possibility.
What's the dividing line between the west and the east, or the dry areas and the wet areas on this? Where does that run, and does it shift at all?
Well, it may shift a little bit east. I do see a little bit more rain in the central and eastern Corn Belt next week, late next week in particular. But the dividing line is really, once you get along the Illinois-Missouri border, running north to Lake Michigan, you get along and east of that line is the demarcation zone between the wet and the dry.
And any other places around the planet that we need to check in on at this time?
Well, a little bit of unusual rain falling in Southern California today and into portions of Southwest Arizona, the remnants of Tropical Storm Payne moving into the desert areas of the Southwest. Also, there's going to be some cooler weather hitting the Northern Plains states late this week and next week as some of the first salvos of the fall season appear on our long-range charts.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking so much time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do look us up online. You can listen to our programming anytime you'd like on demand right there at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. The website is available to you 24 hours a day, and you can find our programming in its entirety there. The Closing Market Report, the Opening Market Report, and Commodity Week, all online at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.